Harlow Landerson had been taken away by the authorities. In his wallet, they had found two Polaroids of Penny Callisto. In the first, she was naked and alive. In the second, she was dead. Stevie was downstairs in his mother's arms. Wyatt Porter, chief of the Pico Mundo Police Department, had asked me to wait in Stevie's room. I sat on the edge of the boy's unmade bed. I had not been alone long when Penny Callisto walked through a wall and sat beside me. The ligature marks were gone from her neck. She looked as though she had never been strangled, had never died. As before, she remained mute. I tend to believe in the traditional architecture of life and the afterlife. This world is a journey of discovery and purification. The next world consists of two destinations. One is a palace for the spirit and an endless kingdom of wonder, while the other is cold and dark and unthinkable. Call me simple-minded. Others do. Stormy Llewellyn, a woman of unconventional views, believes instead that our passage through this world is intended to toughen us for the next life. She says that our honesty, integrity, courage, and determined resistance to evil are evaluated at the end of our days here, and that if we come up to muster, we will be conscripted into an army of souls engaged in some great mission in the next world. Those who fail the test simply cease to exist. In short, Stormy sees this life as boot camp. She calls the next life service. I sure hope she's wrong, because one of the implications of her cosmology is that the many terrors we know here are an inoculation against worse in the world to come. Stormy says that whatever's expected of us in the next life will be worth enduring, partly for the sheer adventure of it, but primarily because the reward for service comes in our third life. Personally, I'd prefer to receive my reward one life sooner than she foresees. Stormy, however, is into delayed gratification. If on Monday she thirsts for a root beer float, she'll wait until Tuesday or Wednesday to treat herself to one. She insists that the wait makes the float taste better. My point of view is this. If you like root beer float so much, have one on Monday, another on Tuesday, and a third on Wednesday. According to Stormy, if I live by this philosophy too long, I'm going to be one of those 800-pound men who, when they fall ill, must be extracted from their homes by construction crews and cranes. If you want to suffer the humiliation of being hauled to the hospital in a flatbed truck, she once said, don't expect me to sit on your great bloated gut like Jiminy Cricket on the brow of the whale singing When You Wish Upon a Star. I'm reasonably sure that in Disney's Pinocchio, Jiminy Cricket never sits on the brow of the whale. In fact, I'm not convinced that he himself encounters the whale. If I were to make this observation to Stormy, however, she would favor me with one of those wry looks that means, are you hopelessly stupid or just being pissy? This is a look to be avoided, if not dreaded. As I waited there on the edge of the boy's bed, even thinking about Stormy couldn't lift my spirits. Indeed, if the grinning images of Scooby-Doo imprinted on the sheets didn't cheer me, perhaps nothing could. I kept thinking about Harlow losing his mother at 6, about how his life might have been a memorial to her, about how instead he had shamed her memory. And I thought about Penny, of course. Her life brought to such an early end, the terrible loss to her family, the enduring pain that had changed their lives forever. Penny put her left hand in my right and squeezed reassuringly. Her hand felt as real as that of a living child, as firm, as warm. I didn't understand how she could be this real to me and yet walk through walls, this real to me and yet invisible to others. I wept a little. Sometimes I do. I'm not embarrassed by tears. At times like this, tears exorcise emotions that would otherwise haunt me and, by their haunting, embitter me. Even as my vision blurred at the first shimmer of tears not yet spent, Penny clasped my hand in both of hers. She smiled and winked, as if to say, "It's all right, Odd Thomas. Get it out. Be rid of it." The dead are sensitive to the living. They've walked this path ahead of us and know our fears, our failings, our desperate hopes, and how much we cherish what cannot last. They pity us, I think, and no doubt they should.